Hi guys, it's Carl here from CaminoWays.com, and today I'm joined on the podcast by Gianna Eckhart and Katharina Hoosman, two marketing academics who carried out some really unique research on the Camino. I think you're going to really enjoy this one. Don't forget that you can subscribe to our podcast by searching for Camino de Santiago in whatever podcast app you use. You'll get weekly Camino news, updates, and interviews. So, without further ado, let's kick off the interview. So, Katharina and Gianna, thank you very much for joining me today.
It's our pleasure. We're delighted to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So, can you guys tell me, where are you talking to me from today?
So, we are both sitting in London in an office, and happy to talk to you today.
Excellent, excellent. And I presume the office is in, of course, the Royal Holloway University of London. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. We're both marketing academics at Royal Holloway University of London, and we were lucky enough to get a grant from the British Academy 2 years ago, and we've been doing research on the Camino since 2016.
Perfect. So can you each tell me a little bit about your background?
So my name is Katharina Hoosman, and I'm a lecturer in marketing at Royal Holloway University of London. And originally I'm from Germany, and I moved to London almost 4 years ago. And yes, now working together with Gianna on the Camino project.
Yeah, so my name is Gianna Eckhart. I'm a professor of marketing at Royal Holloway University of London, and I am originally American, and I've been living in London for almost 5 years.
Okay, brilliant. So marketing and the Camino, I mean, it seems kind of like they're interlinked, but also people might struggle to see the connection there. So what first interested you in the topic in terms of your previous studies?
So we both focus on consumer culture theory, so understanding how consumer culture is changing in society. And based on our previous investigations about other that looked at other pilgrimage routes, such as Medjugorje, for example, but also why other forms of spirituality are rising, so why Hindu practices such as yoga and Buddhism, for example, are becoming more and more popular. We've done past research on those types of topics, and it really made us interested in studying the Camino because there's been such a rise in popularity of the Camino in the past 10 to 15 years, whereas we haven't seen a commensurate rise in people being interested in organized religions such as Catholicism, for example. So we were very interested in what is the explanation for why people are, you know, spending their limited holiday time, for example, doing things like walking the Camino.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point, and it's something certainly that we notice daily here when we're talking to clients and people, experts on the Camino. And also when you see the stats coming out of the Pilgrim Office at the end of every year, it's just an explosion in popularity. Interestingly enough, we did a survey last year and we found that a very small percentage of the people that are currently walking the Camino are doing it for religious reasons. There does seem to be still a spiritual aspect to it, but in terms of the religious connotations, that seems to be dying out as the Camino grows, which is really interesting. So you guys did the Camino, or a bit of the Camino at least. Can you tell me what route did you walk and how much of it did you do?
So we walked the Portuguese route in 2016, and we started in Porto and obviously ended up in Santiago de Compostela. And then in 2017, we walked part of the French route. And that time we started in Astorga, close to Leon, and then walked to Santiago. So we only did like one leg in 2016.
Okay, brilliant. And how did you guys find it, your first experience on the Camino?
Well, it was really amazing. Of course, we had, you know, we got lots of blisters, just like everyone else, which was challenging. But We found it an amazing experience. We walked both the Portuguese route and the French route that Katarina explained, both together and alone. So we got to experience sort of the bonding nature of doing it with someone else, but also the introspective nature of doing it by ourselves. And we also found it interesting to compare the two routes to each other. There were many less people on the Portuguese route, for example, compared to the French route, which was something that we really enjoyed. And there were also more urban elements to walking the Portuguese route as compared to the French route, which was something that we hadn't really been expecting, walking on the side of the road with big trucks going by, for example. Mm. And so, yeah, we really enjoyed being able to walk both of them and to compare them.
Yes, of course. And the Camino itself is, I suppose, now that there are so many routes that have been well marked, it's such a diverse experience that I think there's kind of a route out there for everybody. And whether you're looking for that tranquility, that remoteness, or if you're looking for the social experience. Can I ask you guys, what were the highlights of your trips from a cultural perspective? And I suppose you could take me through both routes if you like, or talk about one and then the other.
Well, certainly one of the highlights for us was the delicious food and the great wine.
Mm.
We really fell in love with the Sobrero cheese with honey on it and discovering Albariño wine. We probably ate those first on the Portuguese route, but made sure to seek them out on the French route as well. So that was certainly one of the highlights.
Yeah, and another highlight was probably this realization that the region around the Camino is also economically revitalizing. I think we were quite surprised to also see that. So we talked to some local people who explained us that the revitalization of the Camino allows families to actually still to still live, for example, in Galicia and to work there, and that they can somehow pursue their family business due to the revitalization and the tourism that is now increasing in that region. And that was a quite interesting aspect of walking the Camino, talking to the locals, and seeing how the economy is reviving recently.
Yes, that's a really interesting point. We're actually located here in Dublin, Ireland. And we have some local Galicians, and we have some guys from Portugal that work in the office as well that would live locally on the Camino routes. And some of them are, their whole, I suppose, family identity is embedded within the Camino culture. Like you said, they've got little businesses there, and the communities just thrive based on the fact that there's somebody walking by their doorstep, where if the Camino didn't exist, of course, that would be a much more rural and unvisited business. And also, it's, I suppose, creating jobs across the world. There's 30 of us here in the office in Dublin, and we owe our income to the Camino as well. So I think that's a really fantastic and relevant thing to talk about that sometimes people miss out on. So next up, I just wanted to ask you guys a little bit about your studies and delve into what you learned about the Camino. A lot of your work on the Camino revolves around this term deceleration. So for a layman, can you explain to us a little bit about what that means?
Sure, no problem. So the idea is that in our daily lives, we live in the world around us is accelerated. Hartmut Rosa, who is a German sociologist, he uses the term social acceleration. So what that means is that we always feel like we never have enough time to get everything done, right? There's always more emails to be answered, time that you need to call your mom, all these things that we want to do much more often, we feel like we don't have enough time for, because the world around us is moving forward at such a fast pace. And so what our research has identified is that people people are more and more seeking out these spaces where they can slow down. So you can think about things like going on a yoga retreat for a couple weeks, for example, or even checking into a hotel that deliberately doesn't offer Wi-Fi so that you can't get online. But the Camino is also an example of this, of a space that allows people to slow down. And yes, we use the term decelerate to describe that. And Katarina can talk a little bit more about exactly what deceleration is.
Yeah, so we found that on the Camino, people decelerate in three different forms. So there is embodied deceleration, technological deceleration, and episodic deceleration. And what that means is that people decelerate, so slow down in an embodied way, that means physical, by, for example, walking rather than taking a car or like driving a car or taking a bus. But people also decelerate technologically. That means that people do not necessarily use less, for example, social media, Wi-Fi or their phones, but they control it in a way that is difficult to in everyday life. And then the third form of deceleration is episodic deceleration. And that means that people on the Camino just engage in less experiences and less episodes of action, I would probably say. And thus they feel a sense of relaxation and slowing down. So yeah, so these are the three ways of deceleration that we found pilgrims are engaging in when walking the Camino de Santiago.
That's really interesting, and thank you for breaking it down for us in such simplistic terms, what is quite a complex theory. And I think it's something that most people who have done the Camino will be able to relate to immediately, even if they hadn't thought about it in those terms or necessarily categorized it into those boxes. Can you tell me, guys, how is it that you actually conducted this research?
Sure. So we took an ethnographic approach to conducting this research. And what that means is that we experienced it ourselves and we wanted to be immersed in the context. So as we told you, we walked, you know, both parts of the Portuguese and the French route. So we had, we could understand what the experience of actually being a pilgrim was like. But in addition to that, we interviewed pilgrims. So we talked to, you know, all sorts of different pilgrims from different ages, all different countries. But in addition to interviewing pilgrims, we also interviewed the service providers who are along the Camino. And so by that, I mean people who owned the cafes and the albergues where people stay along the way, but also people in the tourism office in Santiago and people affiliated with the cathedral in Santiago, for example, to get an understanding about, you know, some of the motivations for why people are walking, how the experience has changed over the years, etc. We also took photos of important places along the way, and we took field notes, which recorded our observations about interactions and experiences that were happening. So that was our overall methodological approach to conducting the research.
And how did you find the willingness of the locals and the pilgrims to participate in your study?
Oh, that was actually wonderful. I think the Camino is such a social place. It was very easy to talk to pilgrims, to locals. So my Spanish is horrible, so sometimes I had difficulties to somehow communicate with locals. But the general willingness and kindness was pretty amazing. That was one of the great experiences, I think, that we had when we conducted this research.
Excellent. And do you speak Spanish, Gianna?
Yes, I do speak a little Spanish. I wouldn't say that I'm fluent, but enough to have a chat.
Okay, excellent. I'm sure you learned some more key words and phrases when you were out there.
Absolutely. I mean, as an American, Spanish is the language that that we always learn in school. So then, I got to improve it even more along the Camino.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I learned German in school, but I certainly won't be trying to converse with you in German today, Katarina. I don't think that'd go.
Try later.
So, guys, what do you think is, from your studies, is the main motivator today for people to walk the Camino?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we were thinking about it before we actually conducted the study, and we can read about the motivation, for example, in the statistics that the Pilgrimage Office in Santiago publishes every year. So I think like explicit reasons are usually like either religious reasons, spiritual reasons, cultural, more sportive reasons. So these are reasons or motivations that pilgrims very often explicitly formulate. However, from our research, we would probably argue that there are also more implicit reasons. So this idea of going somewhere far away from your daily life, from your routines, from your stress and obligations is something that all the pilgrims that we interviewed found very attractive and very interesting. That's a very interesting idea of the Camino. And I think many of our pilgrims were not or didn't explicitly say so, but while conducting the interviews, while doing the research, that was very often a common theme that emerged from the conversations we had with the pilgrims.
Okay, brilliant. And sorry, one second, guys. We have we w I just want to delve into the deceleration aspect a little bit again. You talked about deceleration as a way of slowing down, engaging your mind, separating yourself from technology. Do you think that doing the Camino for these reasons, or whether the Camino brings it on when you do it, do you think it makes the Camino a selfish activity for you to disconnect yourself from the world and from technology?
That's a really interesting question. So we do say that deceleration can only take place in what we call these oases, deceleration. And so what that means is exactly what Katarina was just talking about before, that you have to be away from your daily life, and you have to be in a space that allows you to be able to to detach from your technology, to slow down, to not engage in a lot of decision making, for example. And so whether that is a selfish activity is really interesting. One of the things we found in our research, though, is that it very much motivates a spirit or an ethic of giving back. So what that means is that once people have finished the Camino, so many people find it to be so meaningful that they feel like they want to give back and to help other pilgrims to be able to experience this as well. So you find a very high level of volunteerism, for example. So people wanting to volunteer in the pilgrimage office in Santiago, for example, or at the different albergues along the way, and maybe joining a society in the country that they are from when they get home to try and help to volunteer to help other pilgrims get ready to go on their own Camino. So there's very much an ethic of giving back, and what we took from that is that it's not a selfish activity. So although the benefits that you get when you are walking the Camino yourself, those might be individual, but they instigate or they motivate wanting to help others to be able to experience this as well.
Okay, brilliant, brilliant. I suppose you could liken it to donating money to charity in that way. People will say there's an element of selfishness to it because you experience a sense of gratification when you donate to the charity, but obviously it's for the greater good for everybody.
Yes, I think there is a parallel there, but I would argue that it's even when you donate your time, that's something that's even a more precious resource in today's society than money in many ways. And so I do think that, spending your limited vacation time by going back to volunteer to help other people, to be able to experience the transformation that you might have experienced is something that takes even more effort than donating to a charity, for example.
Okay, excellent. And I totally agree with your point. So technology is something that dominates our lives now. And we've talked about trying to get away from that. a little bit, but anybody who's listening to the podcast, of course, is listening through their computer or through their iPhone or their smart device. Is that something that you feel trapped by?
I mean, what we found in our research is that it isn't really like the use of technology that is accelerating necessarily. But what the pilgrims on the Camino interestingly do, they control it in a way that is apparently difficult to control it that way in daily life. So, for example, some pilgrims had quite elaborate strategies of how to use technology on the Camino. For example, it's okay to write emails. But it's not okay to receive a call. So because when you receive a call, you cannot really control it. Like, what is the conversation about? Like, who's calling you? When is the person calling you? So some people actually leave their phones at home in order to, not even be tempted to call someone. It's just there are certain strategies that pilgrims use to control technology in a way that they cannot at home.
What do you feel is the enabling factor? Why are people more able to control their usage on the Camino than they are when they're in their normal daily lives?
I think that because as we said before, the characteristics of an oasis, of deceleration, which the Camino is, facilitate this. So it's not just the person themselves, but it's also the infrastructure that exists. So for example, pilgrims talk a lot about rediscovering face-to-face communication. So because you happen to be walking at the same pace as someone else, you actually would rather talk to them than to engage with your phone. So maybe you will engage with your phone when you arrive at your albergue at night and they have Wi-Fi there, which there was not Wi-Fi, while you were walking during the day. And so I think it's part of, the physical situation that you're in. So you're walking next to someone and you want to talk to them. The infrastructure, so you don't have Wi-Fi while you're walking, but you might in the evenings. There are these aspects of sort of the infrastructure around you that help to enable you to exhibit this type of control. And then also, I think you start to get into a new routine. So after you've been on the Camino a couple days, you notice that it's not the norm for people to be on their phones all the time. And so you readjust to the new norm that exists there. So I think it's all of those things that come together to facilitate people feeling like they have a sense of control.
And it will be interesting to see how the change in data roaming will affect technological deceleration. At least when we were walking for the first time, we still had to pay like roaming fees. And the laws now have changed. So it's much cheaper to get Wi-Fi, for example, while walking the Camino this year. So
That's a really interesting point, Katharina. And the last time that I was out on the Camino, I think, was October last year, and it was just after the roaming charges had come in, and I did find myself more freely reaching for my phone just to check it throughout the day, whereas I wouldn't have in the past. But I mean, technology didn't exist in the form that we have it 10 years ago, and the Camino has managed to adjust and has managed to build these protocols where it's easier for people to manage their usage. So I think hopefully the Camino will see us through and we won't need to worry about the new data charge laws. So I suppose just to conclude, guys, can you tell me what are your conclusions that you took from the project?
I think one of our main conclusions is that we can offer one explanation why the Camino rises so much in popularity nowadays. So despite the decrease in numbers of people who are involved in organized church, the numbers of pilgrims on the Camino is exploding right now. And this idea of seeking out, slowing down is seems to be an interesting and an attractive idea to people that live in a speeded up society. And so This can be one explanation of why the Camino is rising in popularity so much. And in fact, we also see other countries trying to recreate this experience. So we've just recently been to Ireland. The Irish Camino Society is just had opened the Celtic Camino. So, and there's like a huge revival of pilgrimage in Ireland as well that we experience. We will continue studying the Camino. So Diana and I will go to South Africa in a couple of months to study the Cape Camino. So this is another attempt of recreating this experience in another country. So we see that these type of experiences are really very attractive to people nowadays. And this idea of slowing down, it seems to be something that resonates with people.
So guys, the last question that I want to ask you is a very popular one. Do you think that the Camino is a holiday?
So the answer to that is no. And I think, yes, of course, I understand that people are using their holiday time and their vacation time off of work to go and do it. But here's why we think it's different to a holiday. On a holiday, and let's take a typical example of perhaps going to a beach location where you go swimming and you lounge on the beach and you drink cocktails. Everything is sort of designed to be pleasurable because that's why you're going on holiday, right? But on something like the Camino, we just find that it's more meaningful than a holiday. And here's what I mean. Part of the experience is oftentimes overcoming hardships. So we mentioned blisters before. I can't stop mentioning that. That was probably the biggest hardship for me. But almost everyone gets blisters. You're carrying, your things on your back, on your backpack. Although, of course, there's companies like yours to help with that. Mm-hmm. But, you're walking many kilometers per day. You're staying in accommodations that aren't necessarily, luxury based. You don't have access to all the types of things that you would in your daily life. And so in many ways, you're a pilgrim. You're not a tourist. And what that means is that you are trying to get somewhere and the conditions under which you're doing that aren't necessarily, what you would experience in a package tour, for example. But that is often one of the main characteristics that make doing the Camino so meaningful to people. So many of the pilgrims that we interviewed at the end, they said, no, this was not a holiday. This was, in fact, almost the opposite of the type of holiday I would normally take. But I got more out of this. I feel more refreshed in terms of going home and going back to work than I have ever felt before on doing other types of holidays. Perhaps I had a particular life question that I wanted to address that I thought about while I was walking. Perhaps I all of a sudden realized things that were important to me in my life because I had the time to reflect that I don't normally have, even when I'm on a holiday, let alone in my daily life. And so the fact that it's not a holiday, that it's something more meaningful and that you are a pilgrim and not a tourist was something that was, one of the biggest parts of the attraction to this. So we would just finish on the note of saying, if you haven't done the Camino before, is this going to be radically different to the other types of holidays you probably taken? Yes, it is. But will that be a positive factor for you? Again, probably yes.
So that's brilliant. Thanks so much for joining me today, guys.
It's been our pleasure. We really enjoyed chatting to you, Carl, and we hope that that your listeners find our experiences and our studies interesting.
Excellent, excellent. Thanks a million, Katharina and Gianna, and hopefully I will see you out on a sunny trail soon. So that was Gianna and Katharina talking to us about deceleration and slowing down on the Camino. Some really interesting learnings to take away there. Don't forget, guys, if you want any more information on our walking or cycling tours, you just need to contact the travel specialists at www.caminoways.com. As always, we will be delighted to hear from you.